chapter 21. That it belongs to God alone to create. It can also be shown from the foregoing that creation is an action proper to God, and that He alone can create. For since the order of actions is according to the order of agents, because the more excellent the agent the more excellent the action, it follows that the first action is proper to the first agent. Now creation is the first action, since it presupposes no other, while all others presuppose it. Therefore creation is the proper action of God alone, who is the first agent. Again, it was proved that God creates things, from the fact that there can be nothing besides Himself that is not created by Him. Now this cannot be said of anything else, because nothing else is the universal cause of being. To God alone, therefore, does creation belong as His proper action. Further, effects correspond proportionately to their causes, so that, to wit, we ascribe actual effects to actual causes, and potential effects to potential causes, and in like manner particular effects to particular causes, and universal effects to universal causes, as the philosopher teaches. Now being is the first effect, and this is evident by reason of its universality. Wherefore the proper cause of being is the first and universal agent, which is God, whereas other agents are the causes, not of being simply, but of being this, for example, of being a man, or of being white. But being simply is caused by creation, which presupposes nothing, since nothing can pre-exist outside being simply. By other makings this or such a being is made, because this or such a being is made from an already existing being. Therefore creation is God's proper action. Moreover, whatever is caused with respect to some particular nature, cannot be the first cause of that nature, but only a second and instrumental cause. For Socrates, since he has a cause of his humanity, cannot be the first cause of human nature, because, seeing that his human nature is caused by someone, it would follow that he is the cause of himself, since he is what he is by human nature. Consequently, a univocal generator must be like an instrumental agent in relation to that which is the primary cause of the whole species. Hence it is that all the lower active causes must be compared to the higher causes as instrumental to primary causes. Now every substance other than God has been caused by another, as was proved above. It is impossible for it to be a cause of being otherwise than as instrumental and as acting by virtue of another. But an instrument is never employed save in order to cause something by the way of movement, for the very notion of an instrument is that it is a mover moved. Creation, however, is not movement, as we have proved. No substance besides God can create anything. Again, an instrument is employed on account of its being adapted to the effect, that it may be a medium between the first cause and the effect, and be in contact with both, and thus the influence of the first reaches the effect through the instrument. Hence there must be something that receives the influence of the first, in that which is caused by the instrument. But this is contrary to the nature of creation, since it presupposes nothing. It follows therefore that nothing besides God can create, neither as principal agent nor as instrument. Further, every instrumental agent carries out the action of the principal agent by some action proper and connatural to itself. Thus natural heat produces flesh by dissolving and digesting, and a saw works for the completion of a bench by cutting. Accordingly, if there is a creature that works for the purpose of creating as an instrument of the first creator, it must do so by some action due and proper to its own nature. Now the effect corresponding to the instrument's proper action proceeds in the order of generation, the effect which corresponds to the principal agent, whence it is that the ultimate end corresponds to the first agent. For the cutting of the wood precedes the form of the bench, and digestion of food precedes the generation of flesh. Consequently there must be effected by the proper operation of the creating instrument something which, in the order of generation, precedes being, which is the effect corresponding to the action of the first creator. But this is impossible, because the more common a thing is the more does it proceed in the order of generation. Thus animal precedes man in the generation of a man, as the philosopher says in his book on the generation of animals. Therefore it is impossible for a creature to create, whether as principal or as instrumental agent. Again, that which is caused in respect of some nature, cannot be the cause of that nature simply, for it would be its own cause, whereas it can be the cause of that nature in this individual. Thus Plato is the cause of human nature in Socrates, but not simply, since he is himself caused in respect of human nature. Now that which is the cause of something in this individual, communicates the common nature to some particular thing whereby that nature is specified or individualized. But this cannot be by creation, which presupposes nothing to which something can be communicated by an action. Therefore it is impossible for anything created to be the cause of something else by creation. Moreover, since every agent acts in so far as it is actual, it follows that the mode of action must follow the mode of a thing's actuality, wherefore the hot thing which is more actually hot, gives greater heat. Consequently anything whose actuality is determined to genus, species, and accident, must have a power determined to effects like the agent as such, since every agent produces its like. Now nothing that has determinate being can be like another of the same genus or species, except in the point of genus or species, because in so far as it is this particular thing, one particular thing is distinct from another. Nothing, therefore, that has a finite being, can by its action be the cause of another, except as regards its having genus or species, not as regards its subsisting as distinct from others. Therefore every finite agent postulates before its action that whereby its effect subsists as an individual. Therefore it does not create, and this belongs exclusively to an agent whose being is infinite, and which contains in itself the likeness of all beings, as we have proved above. Again, since whatever is made that it may be, if a thing is said to be made that was before, it follows that it is not made per se but accidentally, whereas that is made per se which was not before. Thus, if from white a thing is made black, a black thing is made and a colored thing is made, but black per se, because it is made from not black, and colored accidentally, since it was colored before. Accordingly, when a being is made, such as a man or a stone, a man is made per se, because he is made from not man. But a being is made accidentally, since he is not made from not being simply, but from this particular not being, as the philosopher says 1 Physics. When therefore a thing is made from not being simply, a being is made per se. Therefore it follows that it is made by that which is per se the cause of being, since effects are referred to their proportionate causes. Now this is the first being alone, which is the cause of a being as such, while other things are causes of being accidentally, and of this particular being per se. Since then to produce a being from no pre-existing being is to create, it follows that it belongs to God alone to create. The authority of Holy Writ bears witness to this truth, for it declares that God created all things in the beginning. God created heaven and earth, and Damascene says in the second part of his book, "All those who say that the angels are creators of any substance whatsoever, are children of their father the devil. For those who are creatures are not creators." Hereby is refuted the error of certain philosophers who said that God created the first separate substance, by whom the second was created, and so on, in a certain order, to the last. Chapter 22. That God can do all things. Hence it is clear that the divine power is not determined to one particular effect, for if it belongs to God alone to create, it follows that what things soever cannot be produced by their cause save by way of creation, must be immediately produced by him. Now the like are all separate substances, which are not composed of matter and form, and the existence of which we will suppose for the present, and likewise all corporeal matter. These things then, being distinct from one another, are the immediate effect of the aforesaid power. Now no power that produces immediately a number of effects, otherwise than from matter, is determined to one effect. I say immediately, for, if it produced them through intermediaries, the diversity might be owing to the intermediary causes. And I say otherwise than from matter, because the same agent by the same action causes different effects according to the diversity of matter. Thus the heat of fire hardens clay and melts wax. Therefore God's power is not determined to one effect. Again, every perfect power extends to all those things to which its per se and proper effect can extend. Thus the art of building, if perfect, extends to whatever can have the nature of a house. Now God's power is the per se cause of being, and being is its proper effect, as stated above. Therefore it extends to all that is not incompatible with the notion of being, for if his power were confined to one effect alone, it would be the cause of a being, not as such, but as this particular being. Now the opposite of being, which is non-being, is incompatible with the notion of being. Wherefore God can do all things, but those which include the notion of non-being and such are those that imply a contradiction. It follows, therefore, that God can do whatever does not imply a contradiction. Again, every agent acts in so far as it is actual. Wherefore the mode of an agent's power in acting follows its mode of actuality, for man begets man, and fire begets fire. Now God is perfect act, possessing in himself the perfections of all things, as was proved above. Therefore his active power is perfect, and extends to all things whatsoever that are not incompatible with the notion of actuality. But these are only those which imply a contradiction. Therefore God can do all except these things. Moreover, to every passive potentiality there corresponds an active potentiality, since potentiality is for the sake of act, as matter for the sake of form. Now a being in potentiality cannot come to be in act save by the power of something in act. Wherefore potentiality would be without purpose were there no active power of an agent that could reduce it to act, and yet nothing in the things of nature is void of purpose. Thus we find that all things that are in the potentiality of matter in things subject to generation and corruption can be reduced to act by the active power which is in the heavenly body, which is the first active force in nature. Now just as the heavenly body is the first agent in regard to lower bodies, so God is the first agent in respect of all created being. Wherefore God can do by his active power all whatsoever is in the potentiality of created being, and all that is not incompatible with created being is in the potentiality of created being. Just as whatever destroys not human nature is in the potentiality of human nature, therefore God can do all things. Further, that some particular effect is not subject to the power of some particular agent, may be due to three things. First, because it has no affinity or likeness to the agent, for every agent produces its like in some way. Hence the power in human seed cannot produce a brute animal or a plant, and yet it can produce a man who surpasses the things mentioned. Secondly, on account of the excellence of the effect, which surpasses the capacity of the active power, thus the active power of a body cannot produce a separate substance. Thirdly, because the effect requires a particular matter on which the agent cannot act, thus a carpenter cannot make a saw, because his art does not enable him to act on iron of which a saw is made. Now in none of these ways can any effect be withheld from the divine power, for neither on account of unlikeness in the effect can anything be impossible to him, since everything, in so far as it has being, is like him, as we have proved above. Again on account of the excellence of the effect, since it has been proved that God is above all beings in goodness and perfection, or again on account of a defect in matter, since he is the cause of matter, which cannot be caused except by creation. Moreover in acting he needs no matter, since he brings a thing into being without anything pre-existent. Lack of matter cannot hinder his action from producing its effect. It remains therefore that God's power is not confined to any particular effect, but is able to do simply all things, and this means that he is almighty. Hence also divine scripture teaches this as a matter of faith. For it is said in the person of God, I am the Almighty God, walk before me and be perfect, and I know that thou canst do all things. And in the person of the angel, no word shall be impossible with God. Hereby is refuted the error of certain philosophers who asserted that only one effect was immediately produced by God, as though his power were confined to the production thereof, and that God cannot do otherwise than act according to the course of natural things, of which it is said who looked upon the Almighty as if he could do nothing. Chapter 23. That God does not act of natural necessity. From this it may be proved that God acts among creatures not by necessity of his nature, but by the judgment of his will. For the power of every agent that acts of natural necessity is confined to one effect. The consequence is that all natural things always happen in the same way, unless there be an obstacle, whereas voluntary things do not. Now the divine power is not directed to only one effect, as we have proved above. Therefore God acts, not of natural necessity, but by his will. Again, whatever implies no contradiction, is subject to the divine power, as we have proved. Now many things are not among those created, which nevertheless, if they were, would not imply a contradiction, as is evident chiefly with regard to number, the quantities and distances of the stars and other bodies, wherein if the order of things were different, no contradiction would be implied. Wherefore many things are subject to the divine power that are not found to exist actually. Now whoever does some of the things that he can do, and does not others, acts by choice of his will and not by necessity of his nature. Therefore God acts not of natural necessity but by his will. Again, every agent acts according as the likeness of its effect is in it, for every agent produces its like. Now whatever is in something else, is in it according to the mode of the thing in which it is. Since, then, God is intelligent by his essence, as we have proved, follows that the likeness of his effect is in him in an intelligible way. Therefore he acts by his intellect. Now the intellect does not produce an effect except by means of the will, the object whereof is a good understood, which moves the agent as his end. Therefore God works by his will, and not by a necessity of his nature. Moreover, according to the philosopher, action is to fold one which remains in the agent and is its perfection, for instance to see, the other, which passes into outward things and is a perfection of the thing done, as to burn in the case of fire. Now God's action cannot belong to the kind of actions which are not in the agent, since his action is his substance, as already proved. It must be of that kind of actions which are in the agent, and are as a perfection thereof. But the like are only the actions of one who has knowledge and appetite. Therefore God works by knowing and willing, and consequently not by a necessity of his nature, but by the judgment of his will. Further, that God works for an end can be evident from the fact that the universe is not the result of chance, but is directed to a good, as stated by the philosopher. Now the first agent for an end must be an agent by intellect and will, because things devoid of intellect work for an end as directed to the end by another. This is evident in things done by art, for the flight of the arrow is directed towards a definite mark by the aim of the archer. And so likewise must it be in the works of nature, for in order that a thing be rightly directed to a due end, it is necessary that one know the end itself, and the means to that end, as also the due proportion between both, and this belongs only to an intelligent being. Since, therefore, God is the first agent, he works not by a necessity of his nature, but by his intellect and will. Moreover, that which acts by itself precedes that which acts by another, because whatever is by another must be reduced to that which is by itself, lest we proceed to infinity. Now that which is not master of its own action, does not act by itself, since it acts as directed by another and not as directing itself. Therefore the first agent must act in such a way that it is master of its own action. But one is not master of one's own action except by the will. Therefore it follows that God, who is the first agent, acts by his will and not by a necessity of his nature. Again, the first action belongs to the first agent, as the first movement to the first movable. Now, the action of the will naturally precedes the action of nature, because the more perfect is naturally first, although in some particular thing it may be last in time. Now the action of a voluntary agent is more perfect, a proof of which is that among us agents which act by will are more perfect than those which act by natural necessity. Therefore to God, who is the first agent, that action is due which is by the will. Further, the same is evident from the fact that where both actions are united, the power which acts by will is above that which acts by nature, and uses the latter as an instrument for. In man the intellect which acts by the will is higher than the vegetative soul which acts by a necessity of its nature. Now the divine power is above all beings, therefore it acts on all things by will, not by natural necessity. Again, the will has for its object a good considered as a good, whereas nature does not compass the idea of good in general, but the particular good which is its perfection. Since, then, every agent acts for as much as it intends a good, because the end moves the agent, it follows that the agent by will is compared to the agent by natural necessity as a universal to a particular agent. Now the particular agent is compared to the universal agent, as posterior thereto, and as its instrument. Therefore the first agent must be voluntary and not an agent by natural necessity. Divine Scripture teaches us this truth, for it is said in the Psalm, "Whatsoever the Lord pleased he hath done, and who worketh all things according to the counsel of his will." Hilary also in his book De Synodis, Comma says God's will gave substance to all creatures, and further on all things were created such as God willed them to be. Hereby also is refuted the error of certain philosophers who asserted that God works by natural necessity. Chapter 24. That God works according to His wisdom. From the foregoing it is clear that God produces His effects according to His wisdom, for the will is moved to act by some kind of apprehension, since the apprehended good is the object of the will. Now God is a voluntary agent, as we have proved. Since, then, in God there is none but intellectual apprehension, and since He understands nothing except by understanding Himself, to understand whom is to be wise, it follows that God works according to His wisdom. Again, every agent produces its like. Hence it follows that every agent works by that according to which it bears a likeness to its effect. Thus fire heats according to the mode of its heat. Now in every voluntary agent, as such, the likeness to his effect is in respect of the apprehension of his intellect. For if the likeness to his effect were in a voluntary agent according only to the disposition of his nature, he would only produce one effect, since the natural reason of one is only one. Therefore every voluntary agent produces an effect according to the reason of his intellect. Now God works by his will, as already proved. Therefore he brings things into being by the wisdom of his intellect. Moreover, according to the philosopher 1 Metaphysics, it belongs to a wise man to set things in order, because the ordering of things cannot be done except by the knowledge of the things ordered as to their relation and proportion both to one another and to something higher which is their end, since the mutual order of certain things is on account of their order to the end. Now knowledge of the mutual relations and proportions of certain things belongs only to one who has an intellect, while it belongs to wisdom to judge of certain things by the highest cause. Wherefore it follows that all ordering is done by the wisdom of an intelligent being. Thus in mechanics those who direct the order of buildings are called the wise men of the building craft. Now the things produced by God have a mutual order which is not casual, as it is the same always or for the most part. Hence it is evident that God brought things into being by ordering them. Therefore God brought things into being by his wisdom. Further, things that proceed from the will are either things that may be done, such as acts of virtue, which are the perfections of the doer, or they pass into outward matter and are things that can be made. Wherefore it is clear that created things proceed from God as made. Now the reason about things to be made is art, as the philosopher says. Therefore all created things are compared to God as products of art to the craftsman. But the craftsman brings his handiwork into being by the ordering of his wisdom and intellect. Therefore God also made all creatures by the ordering of his intellect. This is confirmed by divine authority, for it is said in the Psalm, "Thou hast made all things in wisdom, and the Lord by wisdom hath founded the earth." Hereby is set aside the error of some who said that all things depend on God's simple will without any reason. 25. Chapter 25. How the Almighty is said to be unable to do certain things. From the foregoing we may gather that though God is Almighty, He is nevertheless said to be unable to do certain things. For it was shown above that in God there is active potentiality, while it had already been proved in the first book, there is no passive potentiality in Him, whereas we are said to be able in respect of either potentiality. Wherefore God is unable to do those things the possibility of which belongs to passive potentiality. What such like things are must be the subject of our inquiry. In the first place, then, active potentiality is directed to action, while passive potentiality is directed to being. Consequently potentiality to being is in those things only which have matter subject to contrariety. Since therefore passive potentiality is not in God, He is unable as regards anything that appertains to His being. Therefore God cannot be a body, and so forth. Again, the act of this passive potentiality is movement. God, to whom passive potentiality is unbecoming, cannot be changed. It may be further concluded that He cannot be changed in respect of each kind of movement, for instance that He cannot be increased, nor diminished, nor altered, nor generated, nor corrupted. Moreover, since to fail is a kind of corruption, It follows that he is unable to fail in anything. Further, every failing is in respect of some privation. But the subject of privation is the potentiality of matter. Therefore he can nowise fail. Again, since weariness results from defect of power, and forgetfulness from defect of knowledge, it is clear that he can neither be weary nor forget. Moreover, nor can he be overcome or suffer violence, for these things happen only to those things that are of a movable nature. Likewise neither can he repent, nor be angry or sorrowful, since all these denote passion and defect. Again, since the object and effect of an active potentiality is something made, and since no potentiality is operative, if the ratio of object be lacking, thus the sight sees not. If the actually visible be lacking, it follows that God is unable to do whatever is contrary to the ratio of being as being, or of made being as made. What these things are, we must inquire. In the first place, that which destroys the ratio of being is contrary to the ratio of being. Now the ratio of being is destroyed by the opposite of being, as the ratio of man is destroyed by the opposite of man or of his parts. Now the opposite of being is not being. Consequently God is unable to do this, so as to make the one and same thing to be and not to be at the same time, which is for contradictories to be simultaneous. Again, contradiction is included in contraries and privative opposites, for to be white and black is to be white and not white, and to be seeing and blind is to be seeing and not seeing. Hence it amounts to the same that God is unable to make opposites to be simultaneously in the same subject and in the same respect. Moreover, the removal of an essential principle of a thing implies the removal of the thing itself. If, then, God cannot make a thing at the same time to be and not to be, neither can he make a thing to lack any of its essential principles while the thing itself remains. For instance, that a man have no soul. Further, since the principles of certain sciences, for instance of logic, geometry, and arithmetic, are taken only from the formal principles of things, on which the essence of those things depends, it follows that God cannot make the contraries of these principles. For instance, that genus be not predicable a species, or that lines drawn from center to circumference be not equal, or that the three angles of a rectilinear triangle be not equal to right angles. Hence it is also evident that God cannot make the past not to have been, because this also includes a contradiction, since it is equally necessary for a thing to be while it is, and to have been while it was. There are also some things which are incompatible with the ratio of thing made, as made. These also God cannot do, since whatever God makes, must be something made. Hence it is evident that God cannot make God, for it belongs to the ratio of thing made that its being depends on another cause. And this is contrary to the ratio of that which we call God, as is evident from the foregoing. For the same reason God cannot make a thing equal to himself, because a thing whose being depends not on another, is greater in being and other excellencies than that which depends on another, which belongs to the ratio of a thing made. Likewise God cannot make a thing to be preserved in being without himself, for the preservation of a thing in being depends on its cause. Wherefore if the cause be removed, the effect must needs be removed. Consequently, if there could be a thing that is not preserved in being by God, it would not be his effect. Again, since he is an agent by will, he cannot do those things which he cannot will. Now we may realize what he cannot will if we consider how it is possible for necessity to be in the divine will, since what is of necessity is impossible not to be, and what is impossible to be, necessarily is not. It is therefore evident that God cannot make himself not to be, or not to be good or happy, because he necessarily wills himself to be, and to be good and happy, as we proved in the first book. Again, it was shown above, that God cannot will anything evil. Therefore it is evident that God cannot sin. Likewise it was proved above, that God's will cannot be changeable, and consequently, it cannot make that which is willed by him, not to be fulfilled. It must however be observed that he is said to be unable to do this in a different sense from that in which he is said to be unable to do the things mentioned before, because God is simply unable either to will or to make the foregoing, whereas God can do or will these, if we consider his power or will absolutely, but not if we presuppose him to will the opposite. For the divine will, in respect of creatures, has no necessity, except on a supposition, as we proved in the first book. Hence all these statements, God cannot do the contrary of what he has decreed to do, and any like sayings are to be understood in a composite sense, for thus they imply a supposition of the divine will with regard to the opposite. But if they be understood in the divided sense, they are false, because they refer to God's power and will absolutely. And as God acts by will, so also does he act by intellect and knowledge, as we have proved. Hence he cannot do what he was foreseen that he will not do, or omit to do what he was foreseen that he will do, for the same reason that he cannot do what he wills not to do, or omit to do what he wills. Also, each assertion is conceded and denied in the same sense, namely that he be said to be unable to do these things, not indeed absolutely, but on a certain condition or supposition. Chapter 26. That the divine intellect is not confined to certain determined effects. Forasmuch as it has been proved that the divine power is not limited to certain determined effects, and this because he acts not by a necessity of his nature, but by his intellect and will, lest someone perhaps should think that his intellect or knowledge can only reach to certain effects, and that consequently he acts by a necessity of his knowledge, although not by a necessity of his nature, it remains to be shown that his knowledge or intellect is not confined to any limits in its effects, for it was proved above, that God comprehends all other things that can proceed from him, by understanding his essence, in which all such things must necessarily exist by a kind of likeness, even as effects are virtually and their causes. If, then, the divine power is not confined to certain definite effects, as we have shown above, it is necessary to pronounce a like opinion on his intellect. Further, we have already proved the infinity of the divine intellect. Now, no matter how many finite things we add together, even though there were an infinite number of finite things, we cannot equal the infinite, for it infinitely exceeds the finite, however great. Now it is clear that nothing outside God is infinite in its essence, since all else are by the very nature of their essence included under certain definite genera and species. Consequently, however many and however great divine effects be taken, it is always in the divine essence to exceed them, and so it can be the ratio of more. Wherefore the divine intellect, which knows the divine essence perfectly, as we have shown above, surpasses all finitude of effects. Therefore it is not necessarily confined to these or those effects. Again, it was shown above that the divine intellect knows an infinite number of things. Now God brings things into being by the knowledge of his intellect. Therefore the causality of the divine intellect is not confined to a finite number of effects. Moreover, if the causality of the divine intellect were confined to certain effects, as though it produced them of necessity, this would be in reference to the things which it brings into being. But this is impossible, for it was shown above that God understands even those things that never are, nor shall be, nor have been. Therefore God does not work by necessity of his intellect or knowledge. Further, God's knowledge is compared to things produced by him, as the knowledge of the craftsman to his handiwork. Now every art extends to all the things that can be comprised under the genus subject to that art. Thus the art of building extends to all houses. Now the genus subject to the divine art is being, since God by his intellect is the universal principle of being, as we have proved. Therefore the divine intellect extends its causality to whatever is not incompatible with the notion of being, for all such things, considered in themselves, are of a nature to be contained under being. Therefore the divine intellect is not confined to certain determined effects. Hence it is said in the Psalm, "Great is the Lord, and great is his power, and of his wisdom there is no number." Hereby we set aside the opinion of certain philosophers who say that from the very fact that God understands himself, this particular disposition of things flows from him necessarily, as though he did not give each thing its limits, and all things their disposition by his own counsel, as the Catholic faith declares. It is to be observed, however, that although God's intellect is not confined to certain effects, yet he decides on certain determinate effects with a view to producing them ordinately by his wisdom. Thus it is said, "Lord, thou hast ordered all things in number, weight, and measure." Chapter 27. That the divine will is not confined to certain effects. It may also be proved from the foregoing that neither is his will, by which he works, necessitated to produce certain determinate effects, for it behoves the will to be proportionate to its object. Now the object of the intellect is a good understood, as stated above, Hence the will has a natural aptitude to extend to whatever the intellect can propose to it under the aspect of good. If, then, the divine intellect is not confined to certain effects, as we have shown, it follows that neither does the divine will produce certain determinate effects of necessity. Further, nothing acting by will produces a thing without willing. Now it was proved above, that God wills nothing other than himself of absolute necessity. Therefore effects proceed from the divine will not of necessity but by its free ordinance. Chapters 28 and 29. How there is anything due in the production of things. Again, from what has been said it may be shown that God in the creation of things did not work of necessity, as though he brought things into being as a debt of justice. For justice, according to the philosopher, is towards another person to whom it renders his due. But nothing, to which anything may be due, is presupposed to the universal production of things. Therefore the universal production of things could not result from a debt of justice. Again, since the act of justice is to render to each one that which is his own, the act by which a thing becomes one's own precedes the act of justice, as appears in human affairs. For a man by working has a right to call his own that which, as an act of justice, is rendered to him by the person who pays him. Therefore the act whereby a person first acquires something of his own cannot be an act of justice. Now a created thing begins to have something of its own by creation. Therefore creation does not proceed from a debt of justice. Further, no one owes something to another except from the fact that in some way he depends on him or receives something either from him or from a third, on whose account he owes something to the other. For thus a son is a debtor to his father, because he receives being from him, a master to his servant, because he receives from him the service he requires, and every man is a debtor to his neighbor for God's sake, from whom we have received all good things. But God is dependent on no one, nor needs he to receive anything from another, as is manifestly clear from what has been said. Therefore it was not on account of a debt of justice that God brought things into being. Moreover, in every genus that which is on account of itself precedes that which is on account of another. Consequently that which is simply first of all causes, is a cause on its own account only, whereas that which acts by reason of a debt of justice does not act on its own account only, for it acts on account of the thing to which the debt is due. Therefore God, since he is the first cause and the first agent, did not bring things into being from a debt of justice. Hence it is said, who hath first given to him, and recompense shall be made him. For of him, and by him, and in him, are all things, and who hath given me before that I should repay him. All things that are under heaven are mine. Hereby is refuted the error of some who strive to prove that God cannot do save what he does, because he cannot do except what he ought to do. For he does not produce things from a debt of justice, as we have proved. Nevertheless, although nothing to which anything can be due precedes the universal creation of things, something uncreated precedes it, and this is the principle of creation. This may be considered in two ways. For the divine goodness precedes as the end and first motive of creation, according to Augustine, who says, God is good, we exist. Also his knowledge and will proceed, as by them things are brought into being. Accordingly if we consider the divine goodness absolutely, we find nothing due in the creation of things. For in one way a thing is said to be due to someone on account of another person being referred to him, in that it is his duty to refer to himself that which he has received from that person. Thus it is due to a benefactor that he be thanked for his kindness, inasmuch as he who has received the kindness owes this to him. But this kind of due has no place in the creation of things, since there is nothing pre-existent to which it can be competent to owe anything to God, nor does any favor of his pre-exist. In another way something is said to be due to a thing in itself, since that which is required for a thing's perfection is necessarily due to it. Thus it is due to a man to have hands or strength, since without these he cannot be perfect. Now God's goodness needs nothing outside him for its perfection. Therefore the production of creatures is not due to him by way of necessity. Again, God brings things into being by his will, as we have shown above. Now it is not necessary, if God wills his own goodness to be, that he should will other things than himself to be produced, because the antecedent of this conditional proposition is necessary, but not the consequent. For it was shown in the first book, that God necessarily wills his own goodness to be, but does not necessarily will other things. Therefore, the production of creatures is not necessarily due to the divine goodness. Moreover, it has been proved that God brings things into being neither by necessity of his nature, nor by necessity of his knowledge, nor by necessity of his will, nor by necessity of his justice. Therefore, by no manner of necessity is it due to the divine goodness that things be brought into being. It may be said, however, that it is due to him by way of a certain becomingness. But justice, properly speaking, requires a debt of necessity, since what is rendered to someone out of justice is due to him by a necessity of right. Accordingly, it cannot be said that the production of creatures arose either from a debt of justice whereby God is the creature's debtor, or from a debt of justice whereby he is a debtor to his goodness, if justice be taken in the proper sense. But if justice be taken in a broad sense, we may speak of justice in the creation of things, insofar as the creation is becoming to the divine goodness. If, however, we consider the divine ordinance whereby God decided by his intellect and will to bring things into being, then the production of things proceeds from the necessity of the divine ordinance. For it is impossible that God should decide to do a certain thing which afterwards he did not, otherwise his decision would be either changeable or weak. It is therefore necessarily due to his ordinance that it be fulfilled. And yet this due is not enough for the notion of justice properly so called in the creation of things, wherein we can consider nothing but the action of God in creating, and there is no justice properly speaking between one same person and himself, as the philosopher says. Therefore, it cannot be said properly that God brought things into being from a debt of justice, for the reason that he ordained by his knowledge and will to produce them. If, however, we consider the production of a particular creature, it will be possible to find therein a debt of justice by comparing a subsequent creature to a preceding one. And I say preceding, not only in time but also in nature. Accordingly, in those divine effects which were to be produced first, we find no due, but in the subsequent production we find a due, yet in a different order. For if those things that are first naturally are also first in being, those which follow become due on account of those which precede. For given the causes, it is due that they should have actions whereby to produce their effects. On the other hand, if those which are first naturally are subsequent in being, then those which are first become due on account of those which come afterwards. Thus it is due that medicine proceed in order that health may follow. And in either case there is this in common, that what is due or necessary is claimed by that which is naturally first from that which is naturally subsequent. Now the necessity that arises from that which is subsequent in being, and yet is first by nature, is not absolute but conditional necessity. Namely, if this must be done, then that must precede. Accordingly, with regard to this necessity, a due is found in the production of creatures in three ways. First, so that the conditional due is on the part of the whole universe of things in relation to each part thereof that is necessary for the perfection of the universe. For if God willed such a universe to be made, it was due that he should make the sun and moon, and such like things without which the universe cannot be. Secondly, so that the conditional due be in one creature in relation to another. For instance, if God willed the existence of plants and animals, it was due that he should make the heavenly bodies, whereby those things are preserved. And if he willed the existence of man, it behoved him to make plants and animals and the like, which man needs for perfect existence, although God made both these and other things of his mere will. Thirdly, so that the conditional due be in each creature in relation to its parts, properties, and accidents, on which the creature depends either for its being, or for some one of its perfections. Thus, given that God willed to make man, it was due, on this supposition, that he should unite in him soul and body, and furnish him with senses and other like aids, both within and without. In all of which, if we consider the matter rightly, God is said to be a debtor not to the creature, but to the fulfillment of his purpose. There is also in the universe another kind of necessity whereby a thing is said to be necessary absolutely. This necessity depends on causes which precede in being, for instance on essential principles, and on efficient or moving causes. But this kind of necessity cannot find place in the first creation of things, as regards efficient causes. For there God alone was the efficient cause, since to create belongs to him alone, as we have proved above. While in creating, he works not by a necessity of his nature, but by his will, as we have shown above. and those things which are done by the will cannot be necessitated, except only by the supposition of the end, on account of which supposition it is due to the end that those things should be whereby the end is obtained. On the other hand, with regard to formal and material causes, nothing hinders us from finding absolute necessity even in the first creation of things, for from the very fact that certain bodies were composed of the elements, it was necessary for them to be hot or cold, and from the very fact that a superficies was drawn in the shape of a triangle, it was necessary that it should have three angles equal to right angles. Now this necessity results from the relation of an effect to its material or formal cause. Wherefore, on this account God cannot be said to be a debtor, but rather does the debt of necessity affect the creature. But in the propagation of things, where the creature is already an efficient cause, an absolute necessity can arise from the created efficient cause. Thus the lower bodies are necessarily influenced by the movement of the sun. Accordingly, from the aforesaid kinds of due, natural justice is found in things, both as regards the creation of things, and as regards their propagation. Wherefore God is said to have produced and to govern all things justly and reasonably. Wherefore by what we have said we remove a twofold error of those, namely, who, setting limits to the divine power, said that God cannot make except what he makes, because he is bound so to make, of those who assert that all things result from his simple will, without any other reason, either to be sought in things, or to be assigned.